Good afternoon, and first I would like to thank the organizers for having invited me to speak in front of such a distinguished audience. And I will, well, in fact, my point of view here is the point of view of presenting deterministic numerical resolutions of Navier-Stokes equations, which are my model. Okay. And of course, the best would be, well, in turbulent situations, you know that you have a very broad spectrum of energy from the large scales to the smallest dissipative scales. It would be very nice to be able to carry out direct numerical simulations. What I call direct numerical simulations are very well resolved numerical simulations, which can resolve all the scales, but you know also that for most of the applications, for instance, take a flow around a wing, or not even a plane, a wing, and the flow in the atmosphere, for instance, and in these two cases, for instance, for the wing, you should put about 10 to the 15 modes on the computer, and it's totally impossible. And this type of in the atmosphere, it's much more. Okay? And so in these cases, the only solution, and if you believe that large scales are more important to simulate than the small scales, and in this I agree with Anatole, then the larger the simulations where you eliminate the small scales, so you filter out the small scales, are the only possibility. So this is what I'm going to try to present. And this work has been done with my two collaborators or former collaborators, Professor Olivier Mettet and Pierre Comte, and a lot of graduate students. Some of them I will quote in the talk. I will speak essentially of incompressible flows. So I think it's important to recall the basis of the formalism, and in particular the spectral formalism which we used in Grenoble. And I will speak also a little of something which is important, and even from a theoretical physics point of view, is the problem of identifying coherent vortices. And we will present applications to free shear flows and also to wall flows, boundary layers on a flat plate and also on a cavity. And I have a movie which I hope will work. I don't think I will have time to speak of rotating shear flows, although the last hurricanes we had in France too, at Christmas are a very good example of what can be rotating stratified shear flows. I refer you to my book, Turbulence in Fluids, the third edition, for most of the details of what I will say, and also an annual review paper with Olivier Mettet. Okay, so very briefly, the formalism in physical space of large simulations. So we decide to eliminate the small scales. We filter out the small scales. I consider, as I said, just incompressible flows, although there are developments of large eddy simulations to compressible flows, and we have worked on that, but I will not have time to speak of the formalism. And so in physical space, you decide that you have a filter of width delta x, and this filter is defined by some function g, which is a convolution. And so you have a convolution which you apply to the various quantities, in particular the velocity. So this, to the velocity ui, you associate this filtered velocity u bar, and it is a local filtering. It's not like an ensemble average, for instance. And so the resulting field is rapidly varying in space and time. I assume that delta x is the same in all directions of space, which is not the case for the applications. But I mean, I cannot have detail to discuss all the difficulties of this problem, which is not simple. And so if you assume that delta x is regular and is uniform, then it's very easy to show that the filter commutes with space and time derivative, so that you can just apply it to Navier-Stokes equations, which are here, where Sij is what I call the deformation tensor, and you end up with a filtered Navier-Stokes equations with a subwith stress tensor, which is here. I mean, formally, it's very similar to what Anatole showed this morning for Reynolds equations, but we are not speaking of the same quantities, and this is a different tensor. Generally, I would say 90% of applications, people use an eddy viscosity assumption to model the subwith stress tensor. And so you end up with this LES momentum equation with a modified pressure, which is here, and which you can solve the problem considering the fact that you have a filtered continuity equation. If you know nu t, you can solve the problem. Since many people here are interested also in the mixing of scalar quantities transported by the flow, so you can do that also for scalar, and you have a filtered scalar equation with an this is a subwith scale heat or scalar transfer, which you can model by an eddy diffusivity, and you introduce an turbulent Prandtl number, which is here. So it is also a question when you carry out the large eddy simulations to fix the turbulent Prandtl number. In many studies we did, we took some value which was the highest one permitted in the framework of the EDQNM theory. Well, you know, for instance, the most classically used model is Smagorinsky's model, whose formalism is here, and there have been many interesting and important development of this model in the framework of the dynamic adjustment of CS corresponding to the work done by Germano and people of CTR. A drawback of all the eddy viscosity models is that, in fact, the eddy viscosity, just as the molecular viscosity, you can use the continuous Navier-Stokes equation or the continuous media equation with an eddy viscosity because you have a large separation with a molecular viscosity, because you have a large separation of scale between molecular scale and the continuous median scales, and in fact, the problem is that when you use an eddy viscosity, you do not have separation of scales between the filtered and turbulent scales, and this is the source of the major drawbacks of the eddy viscosity assumption. For instance, you have a priori tests which are done, you have very poor correlation between subgrid and deformation tests. This can be avoided by going to Fourier space, and this was the philosophy which we followed in Grenoble for a lot of time, and it's a special spectral point of view, where here instead of having a subgrid scale inferior to delta x, you have subgrid scales corresponds to modes. Fourier modes larger than Kc, for instance, Kc equals pi over delta x if you work with a pseudo-spectral method. And I have written here Navier-Stokes in Fourier space, where I have put here the nonlinear terms. Well, nonlinear terms correspond to triadic terms, which are here. Well, this is well known, but with a projection operator here. But here I have put all the modes which correspond to triads, whose at least one leg is beyond Kc. So this is the eddy viscosity part, and the same for the passive scalar.
You have a finite.
Well, here I suppose that I am in an infinite domain, so that I can use this.
It's a sharp cutoff
at Kc, yes. And so now I have to use a model, and the model which we used was what I call the spectral platopic eddy coefficient, and the earlier work on that was done by Krishnan using the test field model, and we did the same with Cholet using the EDQNM theory. Well, EDQNM theory, these models, I would say, are a rich man's shell model. And, well, we have a lot of modes. Well, I like very much these EDQNM theories, which give very, very interesting results concerning the phenomenology of turbulence and without and with helicity. So using this type of theories, which give a lot to predict the evolution of the time evolution of a kinetic energy spectra, you can calculate the kinetic energy transfers across KC, and so you can calculate at a kinetic energy level point of view the eddy viscosity coefficient. So here we have normalized this eddy viscosity by this quantity here. So what we plot, which is plotted here, is this and this. This is Kolmogorov constant. So this is non-dimensional, and this is what I would say. It is a very nice way of normalizing the eddy viscosity, which is very helpful for large eddy simulations. So this is the eddy viscosity plateau peak. Krishnan called that cusp, and we show that we had the same behavior for the eddy diffusivity, and you have here the turbulent Prandtl number at the value of 0.6. So this was what we called the plateau peak eddy viscosity, and we have improved it recently by because the former formulation in fact assumed that we had a Kolmogorov K minus 5/3 spectrum across that the cutoff was in the middle of a Kolmogorov spectrum, and we have modified that to account for a more general kinetic energy spectrum like that, K minus M KC, and so the value of the exponent is predicted analytically with the EDQNM theory still by what I call the non-local theory, which is maybe physicists would call that long-range interactions. So you have a value of the eddy viscosity which depends upon M, and in fact this is valid up to M equal 3, but above we just switch out the eddy viscosity. So this is what we call the spectral dynamic model, which we have applied in particular to a channel, a plane quasi flow. And in the channel, in fact, we calculate the spectral eddy viscosity by averaging in planes parallel to the wall, so that M for the channel is a function of Y, the distance to the wall, and T. And now we have a turbulent Prandtl number, which depends dynamically upon M. And this model gives very good results. So this is a channel at H plus equal 390, and the results for the mean flow and for the RMS velocity component are compared with KIM's DNS. The DNS are dots, and well, you see results are very good, and in particular, this peak here is not so easy to predict, and so you may say why doing LES if DNS are possible? In this case, the DNS was done, I think, about 8 years ago by Kim on some Prey machine C98 maybe, and but on a single processor it took something like 1,000 hours. And whereas the LES took only 10 hours. So you see. Here, yes, this is a theoretical result coming from EDQNM, yes? Yes, because in the EDQNM, the only adjustable constant is the Kolmogorov constant, CK here. So this is just a number which comes from the theory.
How does the M really divide?
M, well, I don't have the curve, but we have the curve. I'm sorry, I didn't bring it. Well, here it is indeed. In fact, we looked at two things first, because in a channel, of course, first we calculate the spectrum by an average in the plane, and we made a correction to assuming isotropy, but we realized that the correction did not change the result. So this is why we it's okay just in plane parallel to the plane. In this calculation, the numerical methods were pseudo-spectral in the direction parallel to the wall, and were a compact finite difference of six order in the transverse direction. So it's a, I think this code has a sort of spectral accuracy. We validated a lot the code for DNS at lower. DNS done by Kasagi and collaborators in particular. So this was just a test for this. But again, now I come back to physical space, because when you are involved in the applications, practical applications, either in engineering or environmental, and generally you deal with complicated geometric domains, and then you need to use more finite difference or finite volume or finite volume element type techniques. And so we proposed the formulation of quite a long time ago now of some sort of the average type spectral eddy viscosity in physical space, which we call the structure function model with Olivier Mette, and where we don't put, we just take a constant, instead of having the plateau peak eddy viscosity, we just take a constant value which is fixed by an adjustment due to Leslie and Quarini in 1979, where you just say that the subgrid scale kinetic energy in a Kolmogorov cascade, that the subgrid scale kinetic energy is equal to epsilon. So this fixed the two-thirds here. And decide that this is now supposed to be a local kinetic energy spectrum in the neighborhood of the place where we are, because it is supposed to take into account the spatial intermittency of turbulence, where in some places you have a lot of turbulence, of turbulent cascade, and you need to dissipate the kinetic energy, because an atoll, if you don't do it, the numerical code, if your numerical code is good, it will blow up. And so it's essential for us to have something efficient. And in other places, on the other hand, where you have just laminar flows or just even big vortices or instabilities, etc., it's very bad to put any kind of viscosity which supplements the molecular viscosity, because this is crucial, for instance, in wall flows. If you don't take care, eddy viscosity just prevents TS waves to become turbulent. So and even in a free shear flow, it's not. So this value was calculated in terms of a local second order velocity structure function here, as if turbulence was 3D isotropic, with the aid of a Batchelor or Sags formula, and so we have a formulation of this model involving six, the six or four closest points on the grid, and there are possibilities of extensions to irregular meshes by using still an interpolation of the Kolmogorov two-third law, and in fact this model works very well for isotropic turbulence, and it is about 20% less dissipative than Snagorinsky model. And I think even for other flows, structure function model is better than Snagorinsky. Well, you may say 20%, it's not very much. Well, it's finally more and more people use this model instead of oceanography. But for world shows, it doesn't work, it's still awful. And so we developed more refined versions of this model, which are called the selective, or the, and the other one is a filtered pressure function model, where in fact we, by two different ways, we inhibit the action of the large scales upon small scale turbulence within the eddy viscosity. So, for instance, in the filtered structure function model, the eddy viscosity is calculated on a flow which has been where we have got rid of the large scale shear by now this high pass filter. So this is the expression of the filtered structure function model, but also the selective structure function model is now implemented in various codes at the Atomic Energy Commission in France, and it works well for many practical applications. So this is the first part on the methods. I will show the films and results after, okay? The second part, still methodological, is about coherent vortex identification. I just copied here my definition of what coherent vortices are, which is in the third edition of my book here. So I need at least, well, two important things. First, I think anybody agrees with that coherent vortices are regions of the flow where vorticity is concentrated enough so that you may have a local roll-up of the surrounding fluid. And the second condition, which I don't think was very much proposed by other people, maybe by Anatole Rochko in his pioneering papers, but which I think is very important, is that they have to keep some characteristic shape during a time which is large enough in front of the local turnover time, omega to the minus one, and more we calculate, we identify coherent vortices in turbulent flows, we see this. Now, how to characterize coherent vortices? Well, in practice, you have various ways. Of course, you can plot isosurfaces of high vorticity modulus, very good way, of various vorticity components of low pressure. I think what is one of the criteria which is the best is, what some people call the Q criterion. So if you decompose the velocity gradient into its symmetric and anti-symmetric part, rotational part, and in fact, we have checked on many flows, isotropic turbulence, free shear layers, separated flows, wall flows, that in fact coherent vortices are very well displayed, characterized by positive isosurfaces of this quantity Q, which is the second invariant of this tensor, which is equal to that and proportional to the pressure gradient. In fact, this corresponds to something which some people call Weiss criterion for 2D turbulence, except that Weiss called Q the minus this thing or minus 2 this thing. And it was in fact shown by Hunt and co-workers that this was an approximate good, well, in isotropic turbulence, they showed that it was good for identifying coherent vortices. There's another good, I think, criterion, which is the so-called lambda Q criterion of Jeong and Huisen. I would say that the Q criterion is simpler to implement and at least as good as Jeong and Huisen criterion. You don't agree? Well, still with since our last discussion in Cambridge, and I discussed with the student, and he said that he had checked and, in the channel, Q was slightly better than lambda 2. Anyway. So now let's go to, I have to skip things, just image of things you will see better in the movie. So this is a mixing layer, special mixing layer. It's not the experiment of Brown and Rochko. We have no split up plate. Here upstream, we have a vortex sheet, which is initiated. and which is perturbed by a quasi two-dimensional random perturbation, which is regenerated at each time step. And you see, here this is a spunwise vorticity, and you have the longitudinal vorticity component. Well, we will see that in the movie, and so you will see, as Anatole said this morning, the roll-up of this vortex sheet and the regular shading of these vortices and the stretching of these longitudinal vortices. However, when we increase the spunwise size of the domain with the same code and with the same quasi two-dimensional forcing, so these are new results, Anatole, with respect to what I showed you last time we met. This is the low pressure isosurfaces, and you see obviously something which I call helical pairing, for and which we found in a long time ago with Pierre Comte in a temporal 3D mixing layer. And so here this is the vorticity, it's less this, but well, it seems that still we still have difficulties here to converge towards the classical Bernal and Roscoe structure. So if the movie projector leaves the room with my movie, it will pose a problem, okay? So this is a round jet, which was calculated, and you have here low pressure isosurfaces with something which I call alternate pairing of vortices, which in fact resembles what was presented this morning by Dr. Narashima, and which we identified in with Pierre Comte and Yves Fouillet in 92 in a three-dimensional temporal compressible jet, and where the vortices in fact they reconnect like that. So this is what we call and I showed these things in my books. So the mixing layer, the boundary layer, I have no time to show the statistics, just the image and tell you that it works. So it's a transition in a boundary layer on a flat plate. So this is done by Emmanuel Briand, and it's a weakly compressible calculation at Mach 0.3 on an adiabatic wall. In these calculations, the flow upstream is initiated using nonlinear PSE type code, which was provided to us by Onera in Toulouse. And so this allows to, well, these methods were in fact developed by Herbert and Bertolucci, and they allow to generate either harmonic or subharmonic type of perturbations. What you see here are vorticity components. So, in fact, in the transitional region, we find big lambda vortices, which just lie on the wall. And they induce high and low velocity streaks here. And so this is a transition, and this is here turbulence. And you see that streaks become longitudinal. These are vorticity components for this case. This is the, subharmonic Herbert type of transition, where the vortices are staggered. And you see also that you have shading of, so in green here, these are few isosurfaces, and you will see on the movie shading of these small spikes, regular shading of these small hairpin vortices at the tip of the big lambda. The big lambda travel with some velocity. I have also a movie of turbulence in the developed region, but I will not have time to show it. But well, we see of course streaks, and well, we see quasi longitudinal vortices which raise. So I mean, I think that the interactions between experimentalists and people who do computations in this domain, now we converge towards the same vision, I think, of a turbulent boundary layer. So I just finished like the movie, if it works. Okay, play. So I have to stay here to pilot the thing. Okay. Is there somebody to stop the... Okay, it works. Can you switch off the light? So this is the Klebanov type transition with these lambda vortices. Now this is the edge transition where you will see the staggered big lambda vortices. I will speed up some parts of the film. Well, here the threshold is less chosen. So you see in Italy where transition occurs. And in these calculations, we have verified that we have the good CF at the wall compared with experience. So now this is at the tip of the big lambda vortices where you see two isosurfaces with high and low speed streaks in red and blue. This is a smaller threshold for Q where you see more events. So this is a very nice local Kelvin-Helmholtz instability at the tip of the big lambda. So I think there's a problem. I think I don't know why the movie has gone to the wrong place where it was supposed. So this is very. I'm going to see that now very quickly. Things which this is sabotage. Okay. So because I don't have time to comment this. You are good. I think I prefer to stop the movie because there are so many things after which I want to skip, and so I prefer to stop the movie. I'm going to go to my conclusion, and maybe we'll find some other time for the movie. Okay, so let's try take a last chance. Yes, but this is not, this is 2D turbulence, okay, but it's not. No, I stopped it, okay, just again. Yes, but let's try to get the end of the movie. Okay. So, no, because I would really like to show the jet and the cavity, right. But it is at the end, so this is not. This is just a sort of pedagogic type talk, and this is a stratified turbulence in the atmosphere, formation of layers of pancakes. This is some sort of flow which I think corresponds to the last hurricanes in. The hurricanes are secondary instabilities on that. I have a small controversy with Meteo France because I claim that they couldn't predict that with their models and they don't like this. This is a deep water sinking, cold deep water sinking, the ocean, so convection. And so this is again our boundary layer. So now we are. So now this is a turbulent jet, and turbulent jet, so these are things which I just showed one slide. So this, so we are going to see these, they are not smoke rings, but low pressure rings, where you see this alternate pairing of vortices. In fact, it is a sort of intermittent exchange. In some cases, the flow is more axisymmetric, and some other cases, you have this alternate pairing. So now I speed up the computation. This was done with a code which was quite diffusive numerically, so we have to redo it with a less dissipative code. Because even now there are new codes, even for industrial purposes with a fine. So this is a calculation done by Nete and the student. It's a channel which is heated on one wall, but very strongly heated, and you have an intensification of longitudinal vortices by heating. So now this is a back step. It's a back step, and where you have Kelvin-Helmholtz vortices shaped behind the step, which undergo some sort of helical pairing, and then form big Langlands vortices which infinite the wall. And this is a visualization of the Q criterion with also positive and negative longitudinal vorticity. And at the end, I go to the cavity. This is a very this is a mixing layer. This is the mixing layer I showed before. It is in the domain, narrow domain. We have duplicated the domain in the sunrise direction. But so you see the shedding of these Kelvin-Helmholtz vortices, and you see that they're pairing. And well, it becomes quite a mess downstream. And so la cavity, Mr. Sherman, I have. So this is a cavity, yes. It's a turbulent boundary layer which is initiated by Lund method, automatic Lund method for generating upstream the boundary layer, and which goes above a square cavity of depth equal to the height of the boundary layer. And you see here so you have the Kelvin-Helmholtz vortices. So this is the Q criterion. Kelvin-Helmholtz vortices shed behind the step. They impinge here the other side, and they are distorted again into big lambda vortices, which travel and raise. And here it's very similar to what we have seen in the back step. So now I conclude. So people can take the machine, but I have to keep my tape before they take the machine. I go to my conclusions. So we have to stop this machine. Well, various points from a more fundamental point of view. I think that I try to convince you that for flow prototypes, LES and DNS can, what I say, decipher the vortex structure of turbulent matter and predict its statistics. These last few months you saw everywhere in the newspapers people making great discoveries about deciphering the human genome and these things. Well, we are deciphering the turbulence, and maybe it's at least as difficult, or maybe more. And we have less support also. At same Reynolds number, LES reduce considerably the computing cost with respect to the DNS when the latter are possible. I think LES are a very good tool to study mixing. Some people, even the greatest, for instance, De Gene, said that maybe these methods were, well, just simpler models could do a good job. But for this kind of flows, simpler models are models which were mentioned by Anatole this morning, Reynolds average Navier-Stokes equation. And these models, in fact, have a lot of difficulties to account for effects of separation, rotation, curvature, density difference, compressibility, shocks, and so on. So although we are obliged sometimes to use this kind of methods, you have to test them, and LES are an invaluable tool for that. I think LES are very good also for simulating small systems of control in aerodynamics, turbo machinery, acoustics, thermal hydraulics, and combustion. And also, I think we have to develop mixed approach between LES and industrial. Thank you. Eddy dumping of whom? Of whom? Whom?
Bobo and Orbit.
Yes. Yes. I don't know details about that, so I cannot answer.
Second question. And second question. What would happen if when a large population, like beyond the second moment, concluded when
compare LES and so. No, I said that the yes no I said and well at least it was clear in for the channel we when we can carry out DNS of a given flow this is a very good validation. The LES of course we compare it to the DNS. Well, we can also do experimental validations, but in a given simple geometry, if the DNS is not too expansive, and if you have a good DNS, good numerical schemes, because again, there are some schemes which people call DNS and which are not, LES has to compare with DNS, and this is what we try to do, for instance, for the channel. So it has to compare well, yes. But about large fluctuations, I don't know what you call large fluctuations. We take into account large fluctuations, at least in the resolve scale. We don't predict fluctuations in the subgrid scale, but of course. So don't ask me to give the exponent of the 30th order of the structure function. I cannot do it. Yes.
Yes.
Yes, but why not? You have people speak of soft matter or things like that, turbulent matter, and turbulent is... No, as to keep on some discussions I had, I think turbulence is a very wide, it's a very wide phenomenon. Well, it covers very different phenomena, but...
Last question.
Well, in fact, yes, in this PhD of Emmanuel Briand, he did some, we had that at the beginning of the movie, he did some what he called simplified spot computations, taking an amplitude corresponding to a spot, and we have things which look like spots. So I think we are on a good way for that. It's we need bigger domains, and but you're right. We
are
going
here after a coffee break at 4.
So, yeah. Are you sure?